Mr. Lowndon, reel 35. So we're still talking about
Thomas. Who said, and he's, anyway, dismissed us, and we went off. We were going to make off and take our kit in, so he called me over. So I went over there, he said, you won't be going on this card anymore. We shall soon be leaving here. And I shall be leaving here tomorrow. He said, that's why I called you back. He said, I'm going on UK leave tomorrow. He said, and I shall be taking my commission, and I shall be a lieutenant quartermaster in the Young Soldiers Battalion. He said, I don't know where, but he said, it's going to be in England. He said, I shall have 28 days leave first. So he said, you've got the trains coming off. He said, because you're going to have to stand in for Tommy Page, he said, because Tommy Page is on leave party with me. Oh, I said, oh, no. He said, yeah. He said, you can do that. He said, you'll get through that, all right. So that's how I knew that I was standing in for Tommy Page for the next 6 weeks after he went to, back on UK leave. In actual fact, it was Thompson who told me that. But once I got back to I left Thompson, and Thompson took hands with me and wished me the best of luck. I went back to my billet, and then I was sent for to come to command, and he told me about taking over the colour sergeant while Tommy Page was on leave. So I smiled, I think. And so he said, you know, I said, the RSM just told me. But I didn't mind that. I wasn't frightened of that. I could do that.
So what was the colour sergeant's job? What was different about that?
I'm sure I knew I knew what to do about that.
So what did you do? Just to describe
as
a colour sergeant.
I wasn't frightened of it. I knew I could do it.
Yes, but what were the difference in the duties between being a platoon sergeant?
I mean, you've got to worry about the rations and the pay, and you've got to worry about the company, haven't you? Not just one platoon, you've got to worry about the company. And that's a big difference. But I didn't worry about that. I knew I could do that. I had plenty of training, hadn't I, in their quarter company. I'd see them come and go. I didn't mind that at all.
So what else happened while you were at Vienna?
It wasn't very long after that. It must have been only a matter of days, really. That leave party went off to the UK, and using the overland route. And that's something that we've got to thank General Alexander for. That was a good idea. And then we went back to our original billet. We had this big parade, the handover thing. Once that was over, we then went back to our original billet.
So where were you at Christmas 45?
Oh, that would be, we were back in our original billet then.
You were back in Wilden by then.
Yeah.
Did you have a sergeant's mess for the whole battalion when you were in Vienna? Did you manage to?
In Vienna?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh yes, that was a central mess in Vienna. That was our own, and the officers had the same. Yeah.
Now, at this stage, had people started to be demobbed, or had that not happened yet?
Well, that was the next best thing. You see, we'd already had to chat about the leave. We'd already had to chat about the UK leave. That had been started, the next topic was demob.
So how, we'll get to that in due course, but with this leave, how was that, how were people selected to go on leave?
Well, that was taken from the roster. That was taken from the leave roster in the, which was kept in the orderly room. That was nothing to do with the companies. The companies didn't have any say about that at all. That was all done from battalion headquarters. And that was based on, well, it was based on your length of service abroad. So long as you kept your nose clean, you hadn't been in any trouble. More especially the length of time abroad, that was an overriding factor, but also the date of enlistment. That came into it, but only in a smaller way than the actual time abroad. So the two big factors were, one was, I say, keeping your nose clean, and the other one was the length of time in service abroad. When I came on my leave, I'd been abroad for 3 years and 10 months. And Thomason would have been, Thomason would have been around about the same time.
Can you describe, so what time would this be? 3 years and 10 months, so this would be what year?
Well, I'm talking about overall, and
yeah.
From the time we left England to the time that, to say it like Vienna.
And so...
But of course that leave roster was held at, don't remember that leave roster was, we didn't, nobody had him. The company commanders didn't even have anything to say about that. If anybody was going to make a decision, it would have been the adjutant. Very likely it was his decision.
So
the leave roster was looked after and maintained at battalion headquarters. I'm only talking about UK leave now.
So you were assigned leave back in Britain?
I had mine in... we came back from Vienna, and then we moved 2 or 3 times. After a little while, we then started to move around a bit in Vienna, in Austria. We left Gilden. We left the Gilden. I mean, battalion equal, everybody went from Gilden. Or we moved around to 2 or 3 different places. I can't really... I can remember we were quite near, at one time we were quite near a place called, Graz, G-R-A-Z, that was in Austria. That was the biggest town, Klagenfurt, that we were near there, there were two places, and there again the companies were all dispersed again. They weren't all together, they were all dispersed.
And when did you actually go on leave, between...?
Well, I can't remember when mine was.
It was after Vienna?
I was after Vienna, yeah.
And then you...
We'd moved from Gilden, we'd gone into a different part of Austria altogether. Mm.
Could you just describe the process of going on leave? How did you actually get back to England?
Oh yeah, I said, what happened was, I told you, this route, it was an overland route. I'm especially mentioning that place, Graz, whatever, because that, at one stage, that was the starting point. What it was, they used, when I say troop carriers, do you know what I mean? It's not the 1300 way, it's just a bigger vehicle which had the seats down the side.
But still a lorry, still a truck.
Still a lorry, yeah. With a canvas top. But it had the seats in the middle and down the side. So you could carry twice as many, perhaps 3 times as many. as a 30 anime truck. Well, those were the sort of things that they used for this, to carry the people back. That was all done by the Royal Army Service Corps. They were the people who, that was all in the army, but not our transport, their transport.
But did you go back with, was it like a party of 16th Day?
Yeah, you used to, what happened was that you get, if you were selected for UK leave, it would come out on battalion orders. So, what we would have to do would be to, well, obviously, everybody accepted it, but I mean, if you were selected, you would have to report that the battalion were responsible for getting you to the starting point, which in my particular case, and I'm only talking about my case now, Thomason's case was different because he started from a different place to me. So the point that he started from would be entirely different. But I don't know where that was, but I know where mine was, and that's why I'm talking. This place, G-R-A-Z, Graz, Graz. That's where I had to go. When you got there, you were given a place in one of these, well, what did I call them? Army transporters.
Train vehicles.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. There were maybe four or six of them in a convoy. And you set off, say taking that in my case, you set off from there, and there's a series of transit camps. And the first one would be on the borders of Switzerland and Germany. That was roughly speaking the first one. The next one would have been the next two would have been in Germany. The second one in Germany, you would cross the Rhine. You had to cross the Rhine. So that was the second one. So that was three. Then there was one more in France. I can't tell you the name of the place because I've forgotten them. There's one more in France. And the last one was Calais. Well, when the convoy got to Calais, you were there for one night, and the next morning you would change all your necessary money, be issued with an official leave pass, a ticket to the nearest railway station. In my case, it was Boxmoor, and a ration card for that period. And that was it. Now you've got all that at Calais. You spend the last night at Calais in the transit at Calais. Then you go across the Channel next morning, Dover. When you got to Dover, you just went home. Yeah. So that was it. And that took, I'd say it took six, it's like 6 days and seven nights. So you can call it how you like, and you can call it 7 days if you like. But on the seventh day, you were more or less in England.
And that was included in your month's leave, was the 7 days of getting home?
No, your leave started when your pass was issued to you at Calais. That your leave started then.
Now, you'd been away since November 42, or December 42 from England. How did the place strike you now that you've got there?
That was a... Mind you see there, you had to be... you had to be a bit careful. You know, didn't pay you to take a lot of stuff for a start, really. I mean, you didn't want to, unless you had some sort of memento or something, or something or other you wanted to take and show somebody or something. You know, you just didn't want to take a lot of stuff. There was no need for you to take a lot of stuff. There was nothing hard and fast about what, you know, you could carry what you like. But, I mean, if you were naturally expected to have your washing gear and stuff like that. But, I mean, you'd only need a small pack or something like that, something you could stick on your shoulder.
You weren't tempted to bring back some of these bottles of whiskey?
No. Well, you were tempted, but, I mean, you wouldn't have got away with it because you had to go through, they had to go through customs.
And did they search your packs and so on?
No, you had to declare. If you had anything to declare, it paid you to declare it because they were pretty cute. And I know when I went through, well, I heard them, you've really got to be guided by whoever's in front of you. You're in a line, and there's somebody in front of you, maybe somebody two in front of you, and you can hear the bloke say to them, they've got anything to declare, and he'll say, yes, so-and-so, or no, or whatever, you see, and then see what happens, see what sort of reaction, that, you know, to see what happens, and that gives you some idea. If you had anything to be frightened of, then you knew what to say, more or less.
So you would declare it?
Either you declare it or you didn't, you know, it was up to you, your decision. When he asked me, I said, I've got about 1,500 fags and they're all in tins of 50. So he said, all right, he said, give me 12 and 6 and go and put it on your way. So I paid 12 and 6 duty on that 1,500 fags, which was in tins of 50. And I was through.
Was that a good deal then in terms of?
Well, I suppose it was, really, yeah, but I didn't care about the 12 and 6 very much, you know. But I mean, otherwise, I had a. What did I have? What did I have them in? I was carrying them in something. And he said to me, because he asked me, he said, are they in there? And I said, yes. And I went like this to get it. It must have been a bag or something. And he said, it doesn't matter. He said, give me 12 and 6 and get on your way. That's what he said to me, anyway.
Whereas if you said you had nothing to declare, you could have stopped
you. Yeah, he could have said, let me see what's in your bag.
So
some of them have stopped someone. If they like the look of your face, I don't know how they do it.
And these were customs officials? Yeah. So you were back in England. Where did you go? What did you do over this month?
Oh, I went straight home. I didn't have any plans, really. Nothing special.
Were you thinking about your final DMOB?
Well, not much then, because I didn't know enough about it. I didn't know what the. I knew I wasn't that down, that far down. I knew what my number was. I knew I was 28 group, but I didn't know. What I didn't know was what the plans were for the battalion. You see, I didn't know that stuff. When I came away on leave, I didn't know that the battalion was going to be broken up.
Now, what was 28 group? What does that mean? You said you know you knew your number.
Oh, that was a time of service, yeah.
So what did 28 mean?
Well, 28 age group. That was a DMOB. The age group. They called them groups, you see. Well, that group was, you got your, that was the length of service. Length of service and the age. And I think it was when you...
So they add those two numbers together to get...
That's worked out from that.
So that was your age plus your length of service, and that made 28.
Yeah, and providing again, it's right, got to keep the nose clean. Otherwise, you'd have had numbers tacked on the top. You'd have had a higher release group than what you should have had.
So at this stage, you didn't really know how long further you'd have to serve?
No.
And you were back home for a month. So what did you do with your time over this month?
Well, I didn't do anything very special. I wasn't even married then. I didn't do anything special. I think it was during that month that I met Frieda anyway, at the end of that month. I went back. I knew I didn't think I'd have long to go, but I'd never really given it very much thought, to be quite honest, because I didn't know what the plans were, you see. If I'd have known that the battalion was going to be broken up, and the details, which I didn't know, or which I did get to know in a short, it wasn't too long before I got to know that, then I would have had some idea how much longer I was going to be in. Because I didn't think for a start that I would have to go to Greece.
We'll get to that. So, you were in England again. Had England changed since late 42 in terms of what had changed?
Well, I found that London, I never did know much about London, but I thought that London has changed quite a bit. Nothing much had changed where I lived.
What had changed about London?
Well, I thought that the, of course, you see, they had the bombing and all that, and all we'd seen had been filmed. Or photographs that I'd never seen it personally because I wasn't here when it was being bombed, you see. But all the way around here, there's very little to change around here.
That's Hemel Hempstead.
This area, yeah. Yeah, nothing has changed here very much.
What about the standard of living of people with the rationing and so on? Are they getting worse, or was it just the same as it was in 1942?
No, people had come to terms with it. Most people had come to terms with it. By the time I got back, a lot of people had come to terms with that. Oh yes, and I didn't like it or anything. I can't really answer for them because as I learned once again, I wasn't here, but I'm only going by what the people have told me. But I thought that they got to Britain pretty well.
Now, you're on leave for a month. What happened at the end of that month?
Well, I had to go back to going to, at the end, I had to report back to Dover on the, whatever the date of the, my pass was, I can't remember. Anyway, that was when I had to go back to Dover. I had to get back to Dover for that day. And that was it. Then you just had to wait to then, everyone else is like me on my party. And we just had to wait there and get on the transport, on the boat next morning, go across to Cali, and then get on the transport to Cali and start the journey back.
And that was the same process,
same
transit camps
same
all the way down.
Yeah.
And so you got back, and it was the battalion in the same area?
No, they'd moved again. They moved several times. Yeah, and they were pretty well. If anything, they were more dispersed than this time than they were before, really.
What was morale like in the battalion at this stage?
All right, because people were looking forward to the mob, you see. I knew that there was nothing else to worry about, unless, of course, they were on the shortlist for the leave. There was nothing else to worry about, really, and you could. Nobody was hard pushed. I mean, I didn't. they didn't. I would say myself, as far as we were concerned, and the battalion was concerned, our Irish stint was obviously the spell in Vienna. And once we got that done, over and done with, that went quite well. And once we got that over and done with, there wasn't really anything else to worry about.
Can you remember who took over as RSM after Thomas?
Yes, George Coates. George Coates took over.
And what was he like?
Well, George Coates was hopeless. In a word.
I
served under George in a quarry company when he was CSM of a quarry company.
What did he do wrong? I mean, what was his?
Well, he just wasn't it. He just wasn't. I mean, he was a little tiny. He wasn't a commanding figure or anything like that.
So he didn't have Thomason's presence.
No. You couldn't compare him with Thomason in any way. Anyway at all. I thought he was a pretty ignorant person, George Gates. I'm not saying, I mean, I worked under him, in a quarter company. And that's how I found out how ignorant he was.
How did that happen?
I'll be quite honest, and this is, this actually did happen. One of my jobs daily was to put together the company detail. That's the orders that you put up on the board, order the platoons, and goes up every night. Well, that's all got to be written out. It's got to be put in such a way that people can read it and understand it. And times and numbers and everything, got to do it right. Well, one day we had a company commander whose name was Major Orison. Major Orison was he never came aboard with us.
So we're talking back in 1940,
41 days. We're talking now in the early 40s, Orison never came aboard with us. Anyway, he called me one day, and he was a company commander. And Orison was a solicitor, and he lived in Newcastle. And he was the only, and I mean the only, officer in the battalion that was dressed in the manner that he was dressed. He never had a battle dress jacket. He had a sort of a denim type jacket, different material altogether than a battle dress.
Better quality.
Yeah, of course. But then that was him. You see, that was him. And he called me one day and he said, I've been looking at the. You'd have to write this company detail, what they call the company detail. You should write this out, write it in the book, and he used to sign it. So I've been looking at this, he said, I find it hard to believe, he said that. He said, because he did this, Sergeant Major wasn't there. He said, I find it hard to believe, he said, that the Sergeant Major put this lot together. I said, what lot do you mean, sir? He said, this company detail. He said the company sergeant major never put that together, did he? So, see, now what was I going to say? Now, I could say yes, he did, or no, he didn't. But, I mean, the answer is no, he didn't put it together. But I didn't know what I was caught, you see. And I thought, well, I wonder, what's the right thing to say? So he said, well, what are you waiting for? He said, just tell me, he said. did he or didn't he put this together? And I said, no, sir, he didn't. Oh, he said, you did. So I said, yes. And he said, what about all this lot? And he turned the pages over and he said, what about this lot? I said, the answer's still the same, sir. He said, but he's signed the damn thing, he said. I said, yes, I know he has, but I said, that's the answer to your question.